A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one, and it's a practical one. You've got someone who's never imported anything before, wants to bring in furniture from China to Israel, and needs to know how to actually work with a freight forwarder without getting burned. The core questions: do small forwarders deal with small businesses, or is that beneath their scale? Which side do you engage, the Chinese side or the Israeli side? How do you shop around and compare quotes? And the big one, how do you avoid getting ripped off when it's painfully obvious this is your first rodeo?
This is the kind of thing where the industry assumes you already know the answers, and nobody writes it down in one place. So let's walk through it as if someone's staring at an Alibaba listing right now with no idea what happens after they click buy.
Which, I suspect, is exactly the position our listener is in.
First thing to understand, small freight forwarders absolutely do deal with small businesses. That's actually their bread and butter. The giant multinational forwarders, Quaney plus Nagel, DHL Global Forwarding, DB Schenker, they'll take your call, but you're not their priority. A first-time importer shipping 2 pallets of furniture is not moving their revenue needle. A small forwarder, maybe a 5 to 15 person operation, lives and dies on exactly that client.
The scale concern runs the other direction. It's not that you're too small for them. It's that they might be too small for you if you suddenly need to ship 40 containers.
That's something to ask up front. What's your typical shipment size? What's the largest you've handled? But for a first shipment of furniture, which is probably a shared container, you want the forwarder who does 20 of those a month, not 2 a year. The sweet spot is a forwarder who's big enough to have real relationships with shipping lines, but small enough that your shipment matters to them.
Now, the side question, China side or Israel side?
This is where most first-timers get it wrong. They assume you pick one or the other. In practice, you're almost always engaging the forwarder on the import side, the Israeli side, in this case, and that forwarder then works with an agent on the Chinese side. Forwarders operate through global agent networks. Your Israeli forwarder has a partner in Shenzhen or Ningbo who handles the origin work, picking up from the factory, consolidating, export customs, loading.
You hire the Israeli forwarder, and the Chinese agent is their problem, not yours.
You have one point of contact, one contract, one entity responsible if something goes wrong. You could engage a Chinese forwarder directly. Plenty of them market to overseas buyers. But then you're navigating a foreign legal system if there's a dispute, and you're handling the import clearance yourself, or scrambling to find someone on the Israel side last minute. The only time engaging the China side forwarder makes sense is if you're an experienced importer who wants to squeeze margins by cutting out the middle layer. For a first shipment, that's not margin optimization, that's gambling.
Like doing your own dental work to save on copays.
I'm going to let that image sit there.
Step 1. Find an Israeli freight forwarder who handles LCL shipments from China. LCL being less than container load, I assume.
Right, and that's the term you need to know. FCL is full container load, LCL is less than container. For furniture, unless you're opening a chain of stores, your first order is almost certainly LCL. Your goods share a container with other importer shipments. The forwarder consolidates at origin and deconsolidates at destination. That's a core service, and it's why forwarders exist. They turn a 40-foot container into 20 separate shipments and handle the logistics of that splitting and rejoining.
Let's talk quotes. The prompt asks about shopping around. What does that actually look like, and what are the traps?
Shopping around is standard practice, and any forwarder who bristles at you getting multiple quotes is one you should walk away from. You want 3 to 5 quotes. But here's the critical thing. You have to make sure you're comparing the same thing, and that's harder than it sounds.
Because the quotes are structured differently.
Because some quotes include things, and some don't. And the ones that don't look cheaper until you're staring at an unexpected bill for $700 at the port. You need to ask every forwarder the same question. Is this an all-in quote door-to-door, or is it port-to-port, or somewhere in between?
Break down those terms.
Port to port means the forwarder handles from the port of origin to the port of destination. That's it. You're responsible for getting the goods from the factory to the Chinese port and from the Israeli port to your warehouse or store. Door to door means they handle everything. Pickup at the factory in China, export clearance, ocean freight, import clearance, duties and taxes, and final delivery to your address in Israel. There's also door to port, port to door, and various combinations.
A port-to-port quote will naturally be cheaper, and if you don't know to ask, you might compare it against someone else's door-to-door quote and think you're getting a steal.
Then the shipment arrives at Ashdod or Haifa and you get a call saying your furniture is sitting in a bonded warehouse accruing storage fees. And by the way, customs needs to be cleared, and someone needs to pay the port charges and the terminal handling fee and the documentation fee, and do you have a truck arranged?
The musical equivalent of beige wallpaper that suddenly requires a full orchestra.
I don't know what that means, but I agree. The point is, you ask for an all-in quote. And then you ask them to itemize it anyway, so you can see what's actually in there. A good forwarder will give you a breakdown, ocean freight, origin charges, destination charges, customs clearance fee, documentation fee, delivery. If someone won't itemize, that's a red flag.
What should a reasonable quote look like for this kind of shipment? Furniture from China to Israel, LCL.
I can't give you a firm number because ocean freight rates are absurdly volatile. They've gone from $2,000 per 40-foot container to $20,000 and back down within 18 months during the supply chain crisis. But I can tell you what the components should be. Ocean freight is one line item, and for LCL, you pay per cubic meter. Then there's the origin charges, pickup from factory, export customs filing, consolidation, documentation. Then destination charges, terminal handling at the Israeli port, deconsolidation, customs clearance, duties and VAT, and final delivery.
Duties and VAT. What's the rough expectation there for furniture into Israel?
For most household furniture, customs duty is somewhere in the range of 6 to 12% of the CIF value, cost plus insurance plus freight. Then VAT on top of that, which in Israel is 17%, calculated on the CIF value plus the duty. So if your furniture costs $5,000 and shipping is $1,500, your CIF is $6,500. Duty at, say, 8% is $520. Then VAT at 17% on $7,020, that's about $1,200. So you're looking at roughly $1,700 in duties and taxes on a $6,500 CIF shipment.
A good forwarder handles all of that calculation and payment on your behalf.
Yes, customs clearance is part of the service. They'll classify your goods, calculate the duties and taxes, pay them to customs, and bill you. Some forwarders will ask for a deposit up front to cover duties and taxes. That's normal. What's not normal is a forwarder who's vague about how they calculated the amount, or who won't show you the customs receipt after the fact.
That leads us to the ripoff question. How does a first-timer protect themselves?
Let me give you the concrete red flags. Number one. A quote that's significantly lower than the others. If three forwarders quote you around $2,000 all in, and the fourth quotes $1,100, that fourth one is either not including half the charges, or they're planning to hit you with surprise fees once your goods are in transit and you have no leverage.
Because once your furniture is on a ship in the South China Sea, you're not exactly in a position to negotiate.
That's the fundamental asymmetry. The forwarder has your goods. You have a problem. Second red flag, anyone who pressures you to pay everything up front before the goods even leave the factory. Standard practice is a deposit, with the balance due upon arrival or upon delivery. If they want full payment before anything moves, they might be planning to vanish. Third red flag, no physical address, no landline, no company registration number you can verify. The freight forwarding industry has a lot of what are essentially one-person operations working out of a laptop. Some of them are excellent. Some of them are not. You want to know which one you're dealing with.
How do you verify? Israel has a company registry.
You can check the Israeli Corporations Authority database. It's online and searchable. Look up the company number. See how long they've been registered. Check if there are any judgments or liens. It takes 5 minutes. Also, ask for references. Specifically, ask if they've handled furniture imports from China before. If they can connect you with an existing client who'll vouch for them, that's worth more than any website testimonial.
What about the Chinese side? If the Israeli forwarder is working with an agent in Shenzhen, how do you know that agent isn't the weak link?
You don't, directly. But that's part of why you're hiring the Israeli forwarder. They're supposed to have vetted their agent network. You can ask, how long have you worked with this agent? Have you visited their operation? What happens if the agent damages the goods during loading or loses a carton? A good forwarder has answers to those questions and has insurance to cover it. A bad one says, don't worry about it.
Insurance. That's a whole separate thing, isn't it? Marine cargo insurance.
Yes, and this is where first-timers often make a costly mistake. They assume the forwarder's liability covers the value of their goods. It doesn't. Forwarders have limited liability. By international convention, it's often capped at something absurdly low per kilogram, like 2 SDRs per kilo, which is special drawing rights, an IMF unit, roughly a couple of dollars. If your $5,000 furniture shipment gets destroyed, the forwarder's standard liability might cover you for $200. You need separate marine cargo insurance.
The forwarder can arrange that.
Most can, yes. It's typically a fraction of a percent of the shipment value. For a $5,000 shipment, you might pay $50 to $75 for full coverage. You'd be insane not to take it. Alternatively, you can arrange it yourself through an insurance broker. But for a first shipment, just have the forwarder handle it. Just make sure the coverage amount is actually listed on your quote.
We've got, find an Israeli forwarder, get 3 to 5 all-in itemized quotes, verify the company, ask about their China agent, get marine insurance. What about the actual process? Timeline, documentation. Walk me through what happens from the moment someone clicks buy on Alibaba to the moment furniture shows up at their door.
Step 1. You've paid the supplier in China, and the goods are manufactured and ready. You provide your forwarder with the supplier's contact information and address, and a packing list. What's in the shipment? How many cartons? Dimensions? Weight? The forwarder arranges pickup from the factory. This is where having a forwarder who's done this before matters. They know how to coordinate with Chinese factories. They know the trucking networks. They speak the language.
If the factory is in some industrial park, 2 hours outside of Ningbo, then no one's heard of.
Your Israeli forwarder's Chinese agent should still be able to handle it. That's their job. The agent picks up the goods, brings them to their consolidation warehouse, and does a basic inspection. Count the cartons, check for visible damage. They're not doing quality control, but they should at least confirm that what was picked up matches the packing list.
Then export customs.
The Chinese agent handles export clearance. For most consumer goods, this is straightforward. China wants to export things, it's not a bottleneck. The agent files the export declaration and the goods are cleared to leave. Then, they're loaded into a shared container with other LCL shipments, and the container goes to the port.
How long does this origin side process typically take?
From pickup to vessel departure, figure 7 to 14 days. It depends on the consolidation schedule. The forwarder waits until they have enough LCL cargo to fill a container to a specific destination. If your goods arrive at the warehouse the day after a container was just closed, you might wait an extra week for the next one. Your forwarder should be able to tell you the sailing schedule. Ships from major Chinese ports to Israel typically depart once or twice a week.
The sea transit itself.
Shanghai or Ningbo to Ashdod or Haifa, roughly 25 to 35 days, depending on the routing. Some services go direct through the Suez, some transship through a hub like Singapore or Piraeus, which adds time. Your forwarder should tell you the routing up front. Direct is faster, but sometimes more expensive. Transshipment adds a few days and slightly more risk of delay, but it's perfectly normal.
We're at roughly 5 to 6 weeks from factory pickup to arrival in Israel.
The container arrives at, say, Ashdod port. It's unloaded and moved to a bonded warehouse where LCL shipments are deconsolidated. The container is opened and each importer's goods are separated out. Your forwarder then files the import customs declaration. They'll need your commercial invoice, packing list, and bill of lading. The bill of lading is the key document. It's the contract of carriage, the receipt for the goods, and the document of title. Your forwarder should have provided you with a copy when the goods shipped. The original, or a telex release, is what allows them to take possession of the goods at destination.
Customs clearance. How long does that take in Israel?
If everything is in order, the classification is correct, the valuation makes sense, there are no restricted items, clearance can happen within a day or two. If customs flags the shipment for inspection, which happens randomly and also when something looks off, it can add days or even weeks. Furniture is generally low risk, but if your invoice says you paid $100 for a leather sofa, customs is going to have questions.
Because they're not stupid.
They've seen the sample, no commercial value invoice before. Undervaluing goods to reduce duties is customs fraud, and customs authorities everywhere are increasingly sophisticated about catching it. Your forwarder should advise you honestly on this. Some will wink and suggest undervaluing, and that's another red flag. If they'll help you commit fraud, they'll also help themselves to your money.
After clearance, duties and taxes are paid, goods are released. Then, final delivery?
The forwarder arranges a truck to deliver to your address. In Israel, this is usually within a day or two of clearance. You'll want to be there to receive the goods and check for damage. Note any damage on the delivery receipt before signing. If something's broken, you'll need that documentation for an insurance claim.
The whole process, end to end, we're talking 6 to 8 weeks, and your main job as the importer is providing accurate documentation, paying when asked, and being available to receive the delivery.
Choosing the right forwarder, which is the decision that determines whether those 6 to 8 weeks are boring and uneventful, which is what you want, or a rolling panic attack.
Boring is the highest compliment in logistics, isn't it?
Excitement in shipping means something went wrong.
Let's go deeper on the quote comparison. You said get 3 to 5 quotes and make sure they're all in. But what are the specific line items someone should look for and compare side by side? What are the places where forwarders hide costs?
The main one is the destination terminal handling charge, or THC. This is what the port or the container freight station charges for handling the container and deconsolidating the LCL cargo. It's a legitimate charge, but some forwarders lowball it on the quote, and then the actual charge comes in higher, and they pass it through as a surprise. Ask for the THC to be quoted as a fixed amount, not an estimate.
Fixed, not estimated.
Second, documentation fees. Some forwarders charge a separate fee for preparing the bill of lading, the customs declaration, the delivery order. Others bundle it. You want to see it explicitly. Third, customs inspection fees. If customs decides to inspect your shipment, there's a fee for that. The physical examination, the labor to open and repack. A good forwarder will tell you upfront what that costs if it happens. It's not included in the standard quote because it may not happen, but you should know the number.
If it does happen, you're paying it.
You're paying it. If your goods sit in the destination warehouse beyond a certain free period, typically 3 to 5 days, you start accruing daily storage charges. Know what the free period is and what the daily rate is. A forwarder who's slow on customs clearance can cost you hundreds in storage fees, and you're the one paying, not them.
The quote comparison isn't just about the bottom line number. It's about whether each forwarder is being transparent about the same set of potential costs.
Whether their assumptions match. One forwarder might quote based on 3 cubic meters, another might round up to 4. One might assume a delivery location in Tel Aviv, another might add a surcharge if you're in the Galilee. You need to give every forwarder the exact same information. What's being shipped, dimensions, weight, value, pickup address in China, delivery address in Israel. If you give different forwarders different information, you're comparing apples to, I don't know, furniture.
The sloth fruit of comparison. Let's talk about payment terms. What's standard and what protects the importer?
Standard for a first-time importer is typically a deposit up front, maybe 30 to 50%, with the balance due upon arrival or before final delivery. The forwarder has what's called a lien on the goods. They don't have to release them until you've paid. That's your leverage. Once you've paid in full before the goods have even shipped, you have no leverage.
Never pay 100% up front.
For a first shipment with an unproven forwarder, I'd say no. There are situations where it's normal, if you're using a major forwarder with a long relationship, or if the shipment involves complex origin services that require upfront payment to third parties. But for a new relationship, the risk is too high. The forwarder should have enough working capital to float the origin charges until you pay upon arrival.
What about payment methods?
Bank transfer is standard in the industry. Credit cards are rare for freight, the fees are high, and forwarders don't want the chargeback risk. Some smaller forwarders might accept PayPal or similar, but bank transfer is the norm. Just make sure you're paying a company account, not a personal account. If the invoice says, wire to my personal account, that's not a forwarder, that's a guy with a laptop and a dream.
A dream that ends with your furniture in a warehouse and your money in his pocket.
Korn, you mentioned Alibaba earlier. A lot of first-time importers are buying through Alibaba or similar platforms. Does that change anything? Some of those suppliers offer shipping included or have their own logistics arms. That's an important distinction. When an Alibaba supplier offers shipping, they're typically using their own forwarder, usually a Chinese forwarder they have a relationship with. The terms are often DAP, delivered to place, meaning the supplier handles everything up to your door. The problem is, you don't control the forwarder, you don't have a relationship with them, and if something goes wrong, you're dealing with a supplier who may or may not care once they've been paid.
The customs valuation issue?
That's the other problem. The supplier's forwarder may classify and value the goods in a way that minimizes the supplier's hassle, not your customs compliance. If they underdeclare the value and Israeli customs catches it, you're the importer of record. You're the one on the hook for the penalties, not the supplier in Shenzhen.
You're better off controlling the shipping yourself, even if it's slightly more work up front.
For anything beyond a tiny trial order, yes. Use FOB terms with the supplier, free on board, which means the supplier is responsible for getting the goods to the Chinese port and clearing export customs, and you take ownership from that point forward. Your forwarder handles everything from the port onwards. That gives you control over the shipping, the customs clearance, and the final delivery. The supplier's responsibility ends when the goods cross the ship's rail, and your forwarder takes over.
FOB versus DAP. That's the kind of thing that sounds like alphabet soup, but actually determines who's responsible when the container falls off the ship.
Containers do fall off ships. It's rare, but it happens. A few thousand a year globally. If you're on FOB terms and you have marine insurance, you're covered. If you're on DAP and the supplier's insurance is a mystery, good luck.
Let's shift to something the prompt hinted at. The relationship aspect. If someone's planning to import regularly, not just a one-off shipment, how does the forwarder relationship evolve?
This is where it gets interesting. A forwarder who handles your first shipment well, communicates clearly, no surprises, delivers on time, that's someone you want to keep. They learn your business. They know your product categories, your tolerance for transit time versus cost, your preferred ports. Over time, they might offer you credit terms, pay 30 days after delivery instead of upfront. They might proactively suggest consolidating shipments to save money or alert you to upcoming rate changes.
The forwarder becomes almost a de facto logistics department for a small business that can't afford one.
And that's the value proposition beyond just moving boxes. A good forwarder is a consultant. They tell you things like, if you can wait 2 weeks, rates are dropping because of the post-Chinese New Year lull. Or, there's a new direct service from Ningbo to Haifa that'll cut a week off your transit time. That kind of knowledge is worth more than saving $50 on a quote.
On the flip side, if you're constantly shopping around and switching forwarders to save 20 bucks per shipment, you never build that relationship. You're always a stranger.
You're always paying the stranger rate. Forwarders give better pricing to regular customers. They'll absorb small cost increases rather than pass them through. They'll prioritize your shipment when space is tight. Container space gets scarce during peak season, August through October, ahead of the holiday retail cycle. And if you're a one-off customer, your goods might get rolled to the next sailing while the regular shipments go out.
Rolled meaning delayed to a later vessel.
It happens all the time in peak season, and forwarders decide whose cargo gets rolled. You want to be the customer they protect, not the one they sacrifice.
The advice for a first-timer is, shop around for the first shipment, but go into it with the mindset that you're auditioning a long-term partner, not just buying a one-off service.
Ask questions that signal you're serious about the relationship. What's your typical client look like? How long do they stay with you? What happens when something goes wrong? Because something will go wrong eventually, and how a forwarder handles problems tells you more than how they handle smooth sailings.
What are the most common things that go wrong?
Delays are number one. The vessel is late. The transshipment connection is missed. The port is congested. Customs is backed up. A good forwarder communicates delays proactively. They tell you before you have to ask. Number two, damage. Goods get damaged in transit, during consolidation, during deconsolidation, during final delivery. A good forwarder has a clear claims process and helps you navigate it. Number three, customs issues. The shipment gets flagged for inspection, or customs disputes the valuation, or the HS code classification turns out to be wrong and the duty is higher than expected. A good forwarder catches classification issues before they become problems.
The HS code, harmonized system. That's a whole rabbit hole, isn't it?
a 6-digit rabbit hole that determines your duty rate. For furniture, you'd typically be looking at Chapter 94 of the Harmonized System, furniture, bedding, mattresses, and so on. But within that, there are distinctions. Wooden furniture versus metal furniture versus plastic furniture, bedroom furniture versus office furniture versus kitchen furniture. Each has a different code and potentially a different duty rate. Your forwarder should be able to classify your goods correctly, but you should know what codes they're using and why. If you're importing wooden bedroom furniture and they classify it as something else to get a lower rate, that's on you when customs disagrees.
You mentioned peak season, August through October. Are there other timing considerations someone should know about?
Chinese New Year is the big one. It falls in late January or February, depending on the lunar calendar, and it effectively shuts down Chinese manufacturing and logistics for 2 to 4 weeks. Factories close, workers go home, ports slow down. If you're ordering furniture from China, don't place an order in late January and expect normal lead times. The weeks before Chinese New Year are also chaotic as everyone rushes to ship before the shutdown, so rates spike and space gets tight. Plan around it. Either order well before or accept that things will move slowly.
On the Israel side?
The Jewish holidays in the fall, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, can slow down customs and port operations. Not a full shutdown, but reduced hours and capacity. If your shipment arrives during the holidays, factor in a few extra days for clearance and delivery.
If you're ordering in, say, August for arrival in September, you're hitting both peak season and the holiday period. That's a double whammy.
Which is why the smart importer plans their ordering calendar around these cycles. Order in March or April, ship in May, arrive in June, you avoid peak season surcharges and holiday slowdowns. But not everyone has that luxury. Sometimes you need the goods when you need them.
Let's circle back to the ripoff avoidance. We've covered red flags in quotes and payment. What about red flags in communication? The soft signals that someone is not on the level.
Vague answers to specific questions. If you ask, what's the sailing date and vessel name? And they say, we'll figure that out later, that's a problem. If you ask for a tracking number or a container number and they stall, that's a problem. Legitimate forwarders have this information and share it proactively. If they say door-to-door in 3 weeks from China to Israel guaranteed, they're lying. Nobody can guarantee that. The ocean alone is 3.5 to 5 weeks. Anyone offering guaranteed transit times that are faster than physics allows is selling you a story, not a service.
What about communication channels? Is it all email and phone, or are there platforms now?
Traditional forwarders still run on email and phone. Some have customer portals where you can track shipments, download documents, see invoices. The industry is slowly digitizing, but it's uneven. For a small forwarder, email is still the norm, and that's fine, as long as they're responsive. If it takes 3 days to get a reply to a simple question during the quoting phase, imagine what happens when your shipment is stuck in customs.
Responsiveness during the sales process is a pretty reliable proxy for responsiveness during the service process.
It's the best indicator you have. Also, pay attention to how they handle your questions. Do they explain things clearly, or do they make you feel stupid for asking? A forwarder who educates you is building a relationship. A forwarder who acts annoyed by your questions is signaling that they don't want your business, or that they'll take it but won't respect you.
The condescension surcharge.
It's real, and it's expensive.
We've talked a lot about what to do. Let's talk about what not to do. What are the classic first-timer mistakes beyond what we've covered?
Mistake number one, not knowing your encoder means. We mentioned FOB and DAP, there's a whole set of them, and they determine who pays for what and where risk transfers. If you agree to buy something EXWW, X Works, you're responsible for everything from the factory gate onwards, including loading the truck in China. Most first-timers should not be buying on EXW terms. FOB is the sweet spot.
Mistake number two.
Not factoring in the total landed cost. People fixate on the product price and the shipping quote and forget duties, VAT, insurance, and incidentals. Your $5,000 furniture order might actually cost $8,000 by the time it's sitting in your store. You need to calculate that before you place the order, not after.
Mistake number three.
Assuming the forwarder is responsible for everything. Forwarders provide a service, but they're not your supply chain department unless you've explicitly engaged them that way. If the factory produces the wrong items, that's between you and the factory. If the goods are poorly packed and get damaged, the forwarder's liability is limited. The importer is ultimately responsible for the success of their own shipment.
Mistake number 4.
Not having a plan B. What happens if the forwarder ghosts you mid-shipment? It's rare, but it happens. You should have the contact information for the Chinese agent, the shipping line, and the destination warehouse. If the forwarder disappears, you can still get your goods. You'll need to engage another forwarder or a customs broker to take over, but it's possible. If all you have is a Gmail address and a WhatsApp number, you're in trouble.
Documentation and multiple points of contact. Even if you trust your forwarder, keep records.
Trust but verify, as the saying goes. Keep every email, every invoice, every bill of lading. Take screenshots of tracking pages. It's not paranoia. It's basic risk management for a business transaction involving thousands of dollars and international borders.
We've been talking about furniture from China to Israel specifically, but I assume most of this applies to any first-time import scenario.
The principles are universal. The specifics, ports, transit times, duty rates, vary by country and commodity. But the structure is the same. Find a forwarder on the import side, get multiple all-in quotes, understand your encoder means, ensure your goods, verify everything, and build a relationship. Whether you're importing furniture from China to Israel, textiles from India to the US, or electronics from Vietnam to Germany, the playbook doesn't change much.
One last thing. The prompt asks specifically about scale. Do small forwarders deal with very small businesses, like someone who's importing a single pallet as a test order?
A single pallet is a perfectly normal LCL shipment. The forwarder consolidates it with other cargo and charges you by volume. You'll pay a minimum. Often 1 cubic meter, even if your shipment is smaller, but that's just how LCL economics work. The forwarder isn't going to turn you away because you're small. They're going to quote you a rate, and if you accept, they'll handle it. The only time scale becomes an issue is if you're so small that the minimum charges make the shipping cost disproportionately high relative to the value of the goods. At that point, it might not make economic sense to import at all. But that's a business decision, not a forwarder gatekeeping issue.
The answer to, am I too small for a freight forwarder, is essentially no. The question is whether importing makes financial sense at your scale, not whether anyone will take your call.
And that's a calculation you do before you place the order. Landed cost, total cost, per unit cost, does it still work as a business proposition once shipping, duties, and fees are factored in? If yes, go ahead. If no, you might need to order larger quantities, or reconsider the product, or find a domestic supplier.
That's a sobering but useful place to land. The invisible wheels of global trade will turn for you, but they'll charge you for the privilege, and it's your job to make sure the math works.
Your job to pick the right wheel turners. The good news is, for all the complexity we've outlined, the freight forwarding industry is full of competent, honest professionals who do this every day and want your business. The horror stories are the exception, not the rule. But knowing how to spot the exceptions before you hand over your money, that's the difference between a successful import business and an expensive lesson.
That's exactly what we've tried to provide here. And now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In the 1960s, linguists studying Basque discovered that its ergative case system, where the subject of a transitive verb is marked differently from the subject of an intransitive verb, causes native Basque speakers to describe the same accident differently depending on whether they perceive the agent as having acted intentionally or not. This isn't a grammatical rule. It's a behavioral tic that emerged in bilingual speakers in the Basque country and parts of the diaspora, including a small community in Eritrea where Basque missionaries had established a school. These speakers would unconsciously switch between ergative and absolutive constructions mid-sentence when recounting ambiguous events, effectively encoding their judgment of blame into the grammar itself.
The grammar narks on you.
Your verb endings are testifying against you. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more at myweirdprompts.com or search for us on Spotify. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.